So, you know what I find funny about this movie in regards to The Sopranos, the conversation we were having before this one?
What?
I think, like, in The Sopranos, a show that I'm halfway through, essentially, over halfway through at this point, having had never seen it before, but again, knowing the ending, like you had talked about, like, everybody knows the ending at this point. Like, I think the ending of that show is almost more well-known than more parts of the show are, like, actual particulars of the show are less well-known than the one story beat that the show ends on, which is, you know, the thing with them in the diner when, you know, Journey. I think more people know about that than they know about anything particulars of the show, which is insane. Because the show, like, has a great performance at the center of it. And it's a character analysis of an anti-hero, a true sociopath. And yet people only get hung up on the ending.
Yeah, I think that sticks out the most.
I guess, even though there's way more to it than that. But then I come to something like this, Bubba Hotep, the movie we're talking about in this episode of the Culture Cast. I'm joined once again by my good friend Dustin Rutledge, artist, man about town.
Hello.
a member of the Mile High Club, multiple times, from what I've been told. Yes, the self-Mile High Club. Oh my God.
Still counts.
Yeah, right, exactly. But speaking of peckers and commentary on peckers, because that is a thing that we're going to be talking about in this movie, we are talking about a movie that we have technically covered once before on the Culture Cast. Now, you might be asking yourself, well, Chris, where could I find that episode? You can't, because we did an episode last year at the beginning of the pandemic on Freaked when it had its 20th or 25th anniversary, and on that episode, we had done, back in the day, we did two movies an episode. So we had done, back in the day, Freaked and Bubba Hotep. So what did I do last year? Father Malone and I, good friend of mine, podcaster in his own right, host of Dark Destinations, he and I did a new commentary on Freaked, and I put everything back together and re-released that episode, which means, or meant, I guess, that the Bubba Hotep episode disappeared. It was the half of the show from that episode. I didn't have any interviews for it. Unlike the Freaked episode where I had like 6 or 7 interviews at least. Not to humble brag or anything. But the Bubba Hotep part of the episode got lost in the shuffle because of the way that we took that other episode apart to make the new Freaked episode for the 25th anniversary. So Bubba Hotep is a movie that we technically have talked about.
Guy in a rest home.
You were an Elvis impersonator.
You fell off a stage and broke your hip? Who was it? 20 years ago.
That's where they took a piece of my brain. I got a little bag of sand up there now.
Jack, President Kennedy was a white man.
They dyed me this color.
What we have here at Shady Rest is an Egyptian soul sucker of some sort.
Some kind of Bubba Hotep.
You know, a mummy hiding out, feeding on the sleeping.
He can just keep on feeding unless he's finally destroyed.
All right, man, let's go.
Myself on you, baby.
But the commentary is now gone, but I can give you an amended version of what I thought, because I did listen to the episode on my end to kind of get a better sense of where my head was almost 7 years ago now. I didn't like it very much.
Which is
crazy, because when we talk about it, my opinion has changed, just so you know. Good.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So yeah, Dustin, you and I are going to be talking about 2002's Bubba Hotep. So why Bubba Hotep, Dustin?
So I've always been a Bruce Campbell fan.
It's very true.
Yeah. And I mean, and Bubba Hotep is one that, like, I wasn't aware about until probably the mid-2000s. Someone asked me, have you ever seen Bubba Hotep? And I'm like, what? No. And what is this? And after I heard it was a Bruce Campbell movie and kind of heard the premise of the movie, and I was like, okay, yeah, I got to see this. And I just loved it because it's dark humor, dirty humor. It's just all kinds of kind of B-movie stupid, but the best parts of B-movie stupid.
And what's interesting is it is also a very introspective film about getting old.
It is, yeah.
What it means to get old, and especially in the Elvis character's case. Also, like, what does it mean to be famous? And, like, how does someone who's famous struggle with being famous? Because they talk, I mean, that's another thing that they kind of talk about is, like, the, I guess, the fragility of fame.
In a way.
Which is interesting because, again, I didn't really... I don't know. I think the last time I watched this movie, I must have been focusing on the wrong things, which I think is fair, because this movie is also very slow.
Well, yeah. I mean, you are dealing with a bunch of old people in a nursing home and a zombie. All slow.
Simply setting. But yes, it is also a... For as much as this is a horror movie, I would contend that the horror in this movie is in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
There are some, like, interesting kind of... things that Don Coscarelli does in the movie that kind of give you this, like, what's actually going on, like, a sense of dread throughout the movie. But it becomes very apparent early on that there actually is a mummy. This is not something that he's concocting out of his brain.
But what I also like about it is it's got this kind of silly thing happening with the mummy and what's happening with the old people. And... the whole premise of Elvis and JFK, but there's this, like, really introspective monologue going on with Elvis the entire time. That's very serious and very,
it's like a different movie.
Yeah. It's like, it's this clash of kind of dumb B horror with this attempt to not an attempt. They knew what they were doing, but this, like, serious layer of it to kind of pull you back out of the silliness of it, and then it brings you back in when he talks about his growth on his pecker, you know.
Oh yeah. So if you're wondering what this movie is about, it is about Elvis, played by Bruce Campbell, at least Elvis as he perceives himself to be Elvis. He could be an Elvis impersonator who's just lost his mind, but Bruce Campbell plays Elvis in a nursing home in East Texas. Or West Texas, I guess. And this nursing home, kind of like convalescence home, is also home to a man who believes himself to be JFK, though he is African-American and in a wheelchair. And if that's not the craziest part of this story, which in most cases it would be, their convalescence home is being visited by a mummy wearing... like a cowboy hat and like a button down cowboy shirt that sucks on their assholes to suck their souls out of their bodies, which is a beat that I had forgotten from the last time I watched this movie. So, like, if you've never seen this movie, let's just get this out of the way. We're going to talk spoilers, but this is a movie that's definitely worth checking out just on the premise alone, I would say, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah.
I don't offer up, like, spoilers very frequently in a movie, you know, on a movie podcast like this one, especially with a movie that's, you know, almost 20 years old now, which is horrifying in and of itself. But this is a movie that you should go check out. Like, watch it regardless of whether or not you've heard anything good or bad about it, because it's a unique movie. There's not anything else like it. So just that.
You're going to want to be able to say, yeah, I've seen that movie.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie with a pretty interesting Elvis performance at the center of it. One could even say one of the best Elvis performances that I've seen.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, but let's talk about the movie and spoilers. So yeah, I don't remember any of the serious stuff the last time I watched this movie from like the last time. You know what I mean? I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, it even kind of just starts off that way of this kind of decrepit nursing home, old, frail Elvis.
13 minutes before Bruce Campbell actually speaks in the film. There's that interior monologue, 13 minutes until a line is uttered in the film. That's insane. Wow.
And Bruce Campbell makes a very good Elvis. He does a good job.
I mean, look, we all know about Bruce Campbell and the chin. And, you know, that's the whole, you know, I forget what that book is called, like the, you know, I Am the Chin or something like that.
Yeah.
He kind of looks like Elvis already.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it works. He, you know, he's doing, I wouldn't say he's doing an imitation. We talked on this show before about evocation. I think he's evoking Elvis, not imitating Elvis.
He's not trying. He's just slipping, putting on the slippers.
Yeah, yeah, you see the mannerisms a little bit. But he's not doing the, you know, hey, baby, come here, let me tell you something. Like, it is there, but it's very toned down.
Yeah.
And having just watched Elvis movies last month in September, like, his Elvis that he's doing is a very specific Elvis. And it is not the happy-go-lucky Elvis. It is what the way I would describe this to someone is, it is Elvis as people, in their minds, believe him to be when he was at that, you know, when he died.
Yeah, yeah.
Very disillusioned, you know, and I think, you know, whether or not that was actually the truth is a different story. I think, you know, mention the fact that this is based off of a book by Joe R. Lansdale. Joe R. Lansdale wrote In Cold in July, which is an amazing book, an amazing movie if you've never seen it. It's kind of like this movie in a lot of ways in regards to the style that's brought to it. It's very stylized. But I think a lot of that interior monologue stuff is really helped by being based off of a piece of literature.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it feels very literary in nature.
Yeah. I mean, some of the things that are talked about in that inner monologue are, for lack of a better phrase, almost poetic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And yeah. And it's put together very well what he's saying. And then there's a mummy wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah, it's weird. There's two parts to this movie. There are this kind of like serious look at, you know, getting old and, you know, losing touch with people and your family. And did you do good? Were you good enough to be considered a good man? Stuff like that.
Yep.
Common themes. But then you have the mummy in a cowboy hat. And I think for a lot of people, I mean, like reading the reviews and kind of the responses to this movie, I don't think people knew how to take this movie because I personally don't find this movie very funny.
It's got funny parts, but it's not a funny movie. It's not, you're not going to sit there and laugh the entire time.
It's not a comedy horror movie because we talked about that last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we were talking about arachnophobia being horror comedy, not comedy horror.
Could this be a thrillomedy?
I swear. I will tell you, I honestly think that this is a drama horror, like a dramatic horror film, which is just a horror movie. I just don't find this movie funny. Like, yeah. I mean, it's funny when they say, like, he puts his mouth on your asshole.
Right, it's got like, funny bits.
Yeah, Ozzie Davis is the comic aspect of the film. Bruce Campbell's Elvis is very much the straight man. And, like, you can tell that with the stuff that, you know, Ozzie Davis says, like, oh, LBJ is ugly walking through the hallways. So, like, that stuff's funny. But, the interior monologue stuff for Elvis is just so serious and so
it is
deadly serious that it's kind of hard to balance the two. Because the movie has a hard time balancing the two as well.
It does. And it kind of wraps in, like, almost a conspiracy theory of Elvis.
Right.
You know.
Right, and yeah, they have that too, which was it's kind of amazing how much they get done in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And you brought up Ozzie Davis, and what's awesome about him in this movie is him as an actor in general is very, what's the word? Gravitas. Very, you know, his delivery is specific. And for him to be in this movie and have and not pull back, like he's still very, you know, dramatic in when he speaks. And
well, that's the thing. Like, you know, I had seen him in Do the Right Thing earlier this year. And he's He's fantastic in that. I mean, he doesn't do a whole lot, but this is the role I remember him from. And like you said, it's funny because of how serious he is with the line delivery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because it's so over the top that it's, again, you know, there was like this thing of like, is it actually Elvis? Is he actually Elvis in this movie? It's like, does that matter? Like, that doesn't affect my enjoyment of the movie. Because, like, I would like to believe, sure, that if these guys think that they're Elvis and JFK, isn't that good enough?
It is kind of fun that they never give it to you.
Right.
I mean, they give you the hint, and there's little things that, like, oh, man, there's no other, like, he's got to be Elvis. He's got to be JFK. The scar on his head.
Right.
You know, and all that stuff. But they never give it to you, which I think is kind of fun.
Well, and I think it would also lessen the impact and the message of the movie, because you can take the fact that it's JFK and Elvis, the way you could interpret it, theoretically, is you could say, well, these are two, you know, nobody guys who were terrible fathers because, look, they were put in a convalescence home by their kids don't care about them. So they've invented these interior monologues and characters to, I guess,
cope
with the fact that they're in a convalescence home. So it's much more interesting to be Elvis and JFK than Sebastian Half and some, you know, random guy put in there by his family.
But he does have a dope bedroom.
Oh my god. Ozzie Davis's bedroom, you and I both know what it's going for. It's supposed to be like the Oval Office. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's so weird because you see where Elvis is being kept and then you see where he is, and it's like, what? Is this not even the same place?
Somebody's got JFK money.
Oh, maybe that's what it is.
Well, I like how, what's the line he says where they took out part of his brain and replaced it with a bag of sand?
Yeah.
And he still catches brain waves every now and then because his brain's still hooked up to the battery at the White House.
What's the other thing he said? Elvis is like, with all sincerity, Mr. President, JFK was me. I think it's something to the effect of like, of course they turned me black. That'd be the best thing to do. Like, I mean, yeah. I mean, he's technically not wrong, but
yep.
I do love that. Like, again, whether or not they're actually Elvis and JFK is unimportant, because the fact that they believe that they are, and not only do they believe that they are, they have convinced one another that they are as well. And that,
that's,
again,
yeah,
buying into that. I mean, I think that that is ultimately like the big theme for me in this is like, I don't know. It's just having, it feels a little bit like having faith and, you know,
yeah,
have a little bit of faith, because again, ultimately we all grow old and die, and we would all like to have meant something to someone and have left and have done good in the world. And I think that that's ultimately the message of the movie, is do good in the world, right? You know, they, you know, even when they're in the
up until the end.
Yeah, up until the end. What a cool design on that mummy though, right?
It's awesome.
All the serious stuff aside, because we've talked about the serious stuff a lot. What a cool design. What a unique, memorable design on the mummy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and they never really talk about how the mummy winds up in a cowboy outfit, but the fact that it's in Texas is really the only thing.
I like to believe that it took the clothes off the dead guys that were driving the bus.
Oh, hey.
I mean, it's the only thing that makes... I mean, it makes sense. Can you imagine this mummy crawling out of the sarcophagus and just seeing like a dead body and just covering itself? I mean, look at the clothes, they're like tattered and everything.
Yep.
It's a really cool design. Like, the design has stuck with me for 20 years. Like, I can, if you say the mummy from Bubba Hotep, I can see that like perfectly in my mind.
Well, and I read that they spent like $500,000 on the movie.
Sounds about right.
And filmed it in 30 days. And I think a lot of the money was spent making that mummy look good and blowing up that trailer.
Yeah. So to that point, when I was saying that this wasn't much of a horror movie, it's because they didn't put a lot of time and effort into the horror.
Yeah.
Like, I think you would agree, this movie is more than just that one movie with Elvis and the mummy. It's more than that, because, again, I think it has a message. I think it has an interesting kind of some themes that it addresses. But it's going to get most people through the door on it's Elvis fighting a mummy.
Totally, Yeah.
And I think that I don't, and I think it doesn't give those people who came to this movie enough. And I think you would probably agree.
Yeah, I see. Yep.
There's like the scene with the woman in bed. There's the scene with Elvis and the scarab. There's the scene in the hallway. And then there's the scene, the final scene. That's it.
Yeah.
It's five scares.
That's but how about them scarabs?
Oh my God. Look, I'm not going to knock that because that is a very cool stylistic choice.
Oh, it totally is.
Yeah. It's a that's a cool little puppet. I mean, that's a cool little practical effect.
The little head that pops out.
Yeah, when its head pops out. Yeah. And the mummy looks great. Bob Ivy as Bubba Hotep brings an interesting kind of swagger to the role.
Yeah, he does have swagger.
Yeah, what's interesting about that character is, like you said, there isn't a lot of backstory, and it's not needed. You get as much backstory as you're ever going to get in the scene where he confronts them in the hallway, and Elvis looks into his eyes.
It's almost like, as a viewer, you're just plopped in at this moment in time, and you're along for the ride.
You're getting as much exposition as the characters are. I mean, the only reason you know a lot of the stuff that you do know is because JFK's family takes him to a library and he like looks up some of the information, but a lot of it you get through like quick cut montages between two characters, or as like, I looked up this information and here's what I found, which is kind of lazy, but at the same time, they don't go to the well so many times that it becomes, that it slows down the pace of the movie. Sometimes that's, exposition dumps just make, this like, all right, here we're going to exposition dump for a couple minutes to get everybody on the same page. Like, they don't need to do it in this movie, and I'm okay with that.
And if you think about it, it's an hour and a half movie that only covers, like, what, 3 days?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so there's a lot of in-between stuff happening that you're a part of. They don't skip it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much like a slice of life movie. There's like a small time span. Yeah, no, it's interesting. Have you seen any of Don Coscarelli's other films, like Phantasm?
I haven't, no.
So Phantasm is okay. It's kind of his series, his horror series. So that was Phantasm 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then 5 came out in 2016. It's the thing with the tall man with the ball that has the corkscrew on the end of it, little silver ball.
I can picture it.
Yeah, and it has
I haven't seen any of it.
It's a ball with wings, yeah.
Yep.
And then he also directed a movie that I'm kind of a huge fan of, John Dies at the End.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
Okay, so Don Coscarelli did John Dies at the End, which I see the DNA here.
I do too,
Because that movie, if you've never seen that movie, I did an episode on the projection booth a long time ago on that movie where Mike had me on and we talked about that movie. That movie's wild. It's similar to this movie in that just things just happen.
Yeah.
And Don Coscarelli, with this movie, again, it's being adapted from a Joe R. Lansdale story. John Dies at the End. God, what's the name of the author? David Wong. In that, things just happen too, and you're not given a lot of explanation. And I like that Don Coscarelli is approaching these source materials that are, in a lot of ways, really hard to decipher. And get to the core of, and he... with John Dies at the End, that movie's fantastic. And this, I really like this movie, coming back and rewind. But I like it for the reasons that I didn't expect to like it. I could care less about the horror in this movie. I really could.
One of the moments that stick out to me in this movie, and it's pretty savage for an old lady, the lady lying in the iron lung, and then the other lady walks up to her and steals her glasses.
There are just these like kind of odd scenes,
and it just happens, and then they move on.
There's just like there's odd choices. Like, there's a character in this movie that is, I guess, he's like just like saying things, and the things that he's saying happen to match up with like where the mummy was. It's a character who's, I guess, he thinks he's the Lone Ranger, I guess.
Oh yeah.
But again, there's no context given to that, no explanation given to that, but it kind of works in the thematic foreshadowing of the mummy showing up.
Mm-hmm. Like he's been seeing him the whole time or something.
I guess so. I mean, again, not given any explanation, but I'm okay with that. I like this movie, and I like this movie now more than last time I watched it, because watching it now, the horror part of it is the least interesting part. like the musings on getting old and, you know, growing old and what does that mean, I think are much more interesting than the mummy walking around putting his mouth on people's buttholes. I mean, that is how you get people in the door. That's how you get them in the door.
Yep. You could say that 1,000 times and I'm going to giggle every time.
I mean, it's funny as hell. When you hear JFK, like, say, you know, and the mummy is putting his mouth on people's assholes, like, that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And I like the justification why this mummy would be at an old folks home.
Yeah. Just a little quick bites to eat.
Yeah. They don't put up a whole lot of fight. They just goes and sucks on their asshole a couple times and then they're dead.
And it just looks like they're dead old people in a nursing home. Oh, and the coroners.
What was that all about?
That they're kind of out of nowhere. And
Daniel Roebuck, you know, one of those great that guy actors.
Yeah. Well, and the vibe is even different when it's their scene. Like the rest of the movie is really dark, right? Like everything, even the lighting's dark. And then it cuts to them. It's bright. It's outside. They're carrying a dead body. And something happens every time, whether it's something said, something dropped, you know, there's something every time. It's almost like a little bit of a comic relief detour.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, it's strange. Like this is one of those movies that I understand why critics and fans of the genre of horror would have a hard time taking this one in. Because again, it is kind of all over the genre. It's not just one thing, and in it not just being one thing, that can make it a little hard for people to get on board with. Again, look, it has Elvis fighting a zombie. Elvis is played by one of the horror actors of horror actors, Bruce Campbell. So that gets a lot of people excited, myself included. I mean, that's like yourself. The reason I watched this movie the first time I watched it was because it had Bruce Campbell in it, and Evil Dead 2 is in that kind of like early canon for me of horror movies that I watched, because I watched kind of horror comedies to get myself into horror, because I wasn't into horror initially. So, and Evil Dead is like, Evil Dead 2 especially is definitely up there. Same with Army of Darkness. I mean, it's up there as like, that's the horror movie that will help get you into horror movies because it's not really that scary.
Right. Another interesting thing about the movie, even though Elvis is pretty much in it the entire time, right? There's not much of a scene that doesn't have Bruce Campbell's Elvis in it. There's never any Elvis music played.
Yeah, well, I would think
so. Ever.
I would think not. Probably just, I would assume.
It probably cost some money, but.
Well, let me put it this way. If Elvis's music is anything like the Beatles' music, good luck. Let me just put it that way. I like that it's Elvis and JFK.
I do too.
I like that. I think that makes us, again, if it were just two old people in a, you know, convalescence home, it would be different. But I like it. It gives it a little bit of a different feel. It gives it, you know, a little bit, like you said, B-movie feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's two people that have, there are conspiracy theories out there about those two people. So and it's kind of a like kind of a fun
with American history and culture.
Yep. Too. Yep. They're alive at the same time.
And like I don't think there's anybody in American history or any American who grows up in this country that won't not know who JFK and Elvis are.
Yeah. Fact. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they're Americans that people around the world would know. And look, it makes sense. This movie is a cult classic for a reason. Not just because it's a Don Coscarelli movie, not just because it's a Bruce Campbell movie, but how many times have you seen Elvis and JFK in a horror movie together? Oh, wait.
Exactly.
Oh, wait, never. So
one time, and it's this movie. Yeah. Which I did read that whether it ever comes to fruition, there was a prequel in the works after this movie was made. They were going to do a prequel of Bubba Hotep
with Elvis.
Yeah.
Kent Campbell actually playing Elvis. Cause that's the smart thing to do, right? Is then just have another movie where he actually just plays Elvis.
Yep.
That's the way you write yourself out of this hole.
Yep.
I mean, it is. Cause you know, he dies at the end of the movies.
Yeah. There's no sequel.
No, I read that too. And look, it's been 20 years. Like at some point. At some point, either shit or get off the pot. And frankly, if you make it without Bruce Campbell, why are you making it?
Yeah, and he's just getting older.
Yeah, and I think he said, I think Bruce Campbell said, like, I don't want to have anything to do with the sequel if the script was the one that they had in 07.
Oh.
14 years ago, mind you, which is, God, Jesus. It to me, I think, is going to be similar to, I guess, I would have said Evil Dead up until recently, but it got turned into a comic book. Bubba Hotep X Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
So good, I guess.
There's a wild ride of a comic book.
Yeah. I mean, look, they did it for Army of Darkness versus Freddy versus Jason. The thing that they wanted to make and they couldn't because they couldn't get the licensing. So they made it in comic book form because in comic books, it doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about your actor being willing to come back in the comic books. You just draw the fucking character and move on.
Yep. Although I would have watched that movie.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, Freddy versus Jason was, they were trying to get the ending to be either Pinhead shows up or Ash shows up. And they couldn't make it happen due to licensing. They talk about it in the Nightmare Before Christmas. The Nightmare on Elm Street documentary. They talk about it when they talk about Freddy versus Jason. Which, by the way, I'm sure you would agree, exponentially more interesting than what we ended up getting, which was the wet fart of an ending. I mean, it was. It is the lame. I mean, at least in Godzilla versus Kong, they had the wherewithal to just say, well, in the end, they both teamed up and they lived happily ever after. In Freddy versus Jason, they could have done that. They frankly should have done that. Why the fuck you care about the human beings in the Freddy versus Jason movie is so fucking beyond me at this point. Like, if I think about Freddy versus Jason, if you genuinely think about that movie, why are the human characters in it? Why are there human... The people went there to root for Freddy and Jason.
Yeah.
People weren't there to see John Ritter's son and some other... I forget the actress's name. Some other actress fight Freddy and Jason. Like, fuck that. It's a quainter time of filmmaking. Because in this day and age, they would make that movie. Where it's just them, or no, they wouldn't. Never mind. Godzilla versus Kong is a good example. They still don't fucking care.
Yep.
What am I? Who am I kidding? They still haven't figured out how to make a movie like that.
They had to have the warm up fights.
The Godzilla versus Kong movie had one warm up fight and then one other fight. At least Freddy versus Jason had several fights.
It did, yeah, yeah. They kept meeting on each other's turf.
What a weird movie, though, to, like, actually exist, if you think about it. Like, the fact that we actually got that movie, and it's not a complete and utter nightmare, is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, it really is.
Yeah. It made me think about, even though it didn't happen, it made me think about the blending of other horror franchises, like, how cool that would be.
Licensing. It's a bitch, because I would have gladly watched an Evil Dead X Friday and Nightmare movie. That would be super cool. Because then you solve the problem of those movies, which is I would only care about a hero if they were already well established.
Mm-hmm.
So like Ghostbusters versus... Who would be a cool ghost for the Ghostbusters to like square off against? Ghost bad guy.
I'm racking my brain here. Ghost.
Yeah, I can't. I mean,
ghosts.
It would probably be, I guess, you know what it is?
Bubba Hotep? I don't know.
Right. Well, what's funny is it's actually the comic book company that publishes the Ghostbusters comics is the same one that does all the Army of Darkness stuff.
Uh-huh.
Which is why, when I think about it, the Ghostbusters like crossover stuff that they did is Ghostbusters crossing over with other people, not them against someone. So it's like Ghostbusters, I think it was Ghostbusters and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
Totally makes sense. 4 and 4, different personalities.
I mean, you could do Ghostbusters in like Pet Sematary or something. Poltergeist.
Huh, that wouldn't be... I mean, what are they? I guess they do have that shout out to Ghostbusters and Casper.
Oh, yeah.
Who are you going to call? That, somebody else.
Boy, that'd be a dark movie if Ghostbusters showed up to capture Casper.
I think... Unfortunately, the watermark is set so high with Ghostbusters in comedy horror that nothing comes close.
Yeah.
And everybody has been chasing that white that White Dragon since that movie came out. I mean, they really have. Nobody has been able to recapture that.
It was made at the right time, with the right people. Everything was perfect.
Yeah. Ivan Reitman couldn't even recapture it with Ghostbusters 2 or Evolution.
And I'm sure.
And Ghostbusters 2 are good movies in their own right. They really are.
And we digress from this movie, but I'm sure you've seen or read or whatever Dan Aykroyd's original iteration of Ghostbusters and how
much different,
how out there it was.
Well, I mean, it was a movie that was like a special effects nightmare. Like, it would never have been able to have been made in the time he wanted it made. Mm-hmm. Now it could, but not then. I don't know what it was about Ghostbusters, but it really captured horror comedy in a way that no other movie has been able to.
Oh yeah, I agree. It something about the music in it is one thing. Like lets you know, like, oh, something's gonna happen, and it does.
It's minimalist too, in a lot of ways. It's a lot of it's a lot of like piano kind of little foreshadowing.
Yeah, I think
it doesn't get in the way of anything.
I think the score is really good in that, and it brings you in.
I just don't know why no one has been able to recapture that success, but it is hard to mesh comedy and horror. And you see something like this is an example. Because again, I don't think this is a comedy. It is kind of scary, but I think ultimately it's more of a drama.
Yeah.
It's a pretty serious movie. It really is.
It really is. So something else that kind of drew me in this movie was, so the writing is one thing, but the lighting kind of keeps you leaning forward, looking. Most of the times they show the mummy in the first half, it's always in the shadow, and you're like, ah, what does that thing look like? There's a scene where he's got the space heater on, and that's what's lighting the room. It's just this orange glow. And it's just kind of cool.
What about the hallway scene where the mummy is backlit with that rotating light?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Don Coscarelli brings to this an eye for how to set up a shot and how to get like a really cool, stylistic shot. I mean, that shot of the mummy walking through the hallway and Elvis watching him. The first time we really get to see the mummy in all of its glory.
It's kind of an iconic moment of the movie. Yeah,
I would say so. It's kind of the movie's big moment. It's really stylistic and it's really well shot. Don Coscarelli is a good director, especially visually.
Yeah. And that shot and maybe the nurse applying the cream.
To Elvis's fucking pecker boil on his dick, I guess. So fucking gross. I forgot about that. Like the whole thing with like Elvis can't keep his cock up. Like what the fuck? You guys can see Dustin right now. He's just laughing giddily.
Yeah, that cracked me up. And just how proud he was.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just like,
boner. You want to touch it? You want to touch my pecker? Like, okay. Can we talk about something that really stood out to me? Boy, the old man makeup in this movie on Bruce Campbell is really bad.
It's not good. You can tell.
No. Come on. You're being fucking generous now.
You can tell it's just caked on there.
It's not good as generous. It is atrocious. And especially when there are a lot of close shots on Elvis's face.
Yeah, there is.
Looking, well, again, they have a movie that has, like we talked about, an internal monologue of the character. And so in having an internal monologue, you will have long stretches of time with the character just the camera focused on the character's face, like thinking in thought, and you're hearing their thoughts. And God damn it, Bruce Campbell looks so bad. They pancaked that shit on his face. It's awful.
When him and Ozzy are next to each other in a scene, like there's real old and then there's the makeup old. You can tell.
Yeah, because Ozzy Davis, I mean, this is right near the end of his career.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell's 63 now. He was 40, you know, 1 or 2 then. Like, Jesus H. Christ. Yeah, Ozzy Davis, when he passed away, was 87. So Ozzy Davis was, like you said, actual old. He's twice as old as Bruce Campbell.
That's something.
Makeup is hard, but come on.
Well, and especially when the rest of the cast is actually old.
Yes.
And so he kind of sticks out like a sore thumb.
And what's funny is if you look at the poster of the movie, it is not Old Man Elvis.
No, it's not.
It's never old. You never see Old Man Elvis in any of the poster promotional artwork for the movie because they know how bad it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Because it looks so bad, man. It's so bad. The budget. I mean, this is 2002. This isn't 1942. Come on.
You know,
the makeup's hard, but it's still. There's better options than this.
There's one scene that left me thinking, "How did they do that?" And it's Elvis going down that hill towards the river, and they made it look so difficult for him to traverse down the hill.
Well, but it comes back at the end of the movie because then they go flying off of it at the end of the movie. They have to reinforce to you how dangerous that hill is for an old man.
But the way he scooted down, like, I don't know if Bruce Campbell really was like kind of scooting and sliding down the hill like that, or if it was filmed that way. I just thought, I was like, man, they really made that look like he was about to die going down that hill.
Well, I don't think you're supposed to use walkers on inclines.
No, yeah, they're not made for that.
How do you feel about the climax of the movie? You have Elvis and JFK and Elvis are fighting the mummy in a field in like a little clearing.
It's very much okay. This happens now. That's going to happen now. This happens, and maybe it's because it's a fight scene with two old guys, one with a walker, one in a wheelchair. But it's not a fast-paced climax scene. It's kind of humorous how it unfolds. Like, you stay here. I'm gonna flush him out
on his little scooter.
And then how the wheelchair comes flying back to pick up Elvis.
I think my favorite thing about the end of the movie is they do this other interesting stylistic choice, where they have the mummy able to speak through...
Oh, yeah.
Hieroglyphics. I guess I don't... Having watched this movie several times, I don't know if Elvis can see what he's saying or if the mummy is talking directly to us, the audience. I think one time he says, by the red eye of Cleopatra or something.
Ra.
And the red eye of Ra. And then the other thing is, you suck Anubis's dog dick. Which is pretty funny.
The writing on the bathroom wall.
Yeah.
Cleopatra does the nasty.
Yeah, there's this weird side plot of them finding hieroglyphics in the bathroom.
And Bubba Hotep's just like one of the guys, I guess.
Taking a shit. He's shitting out the souls.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that they keep talking about in the movie, is wanting to avoid being, you know, flushed down the toilet.
Yeah.
By the mummy sucking on their butts. After sucking on their butts.
And as Bubba Hotep is doing that, he's carving on the bathroom wall.
Guess so. So there was supposed to be a sequel to this movie.
Oh, was there?
They keep talking about
it. I knew about the prequel. I didn't know about the sequel.
Well, they talked about a prequel, then they talked about a sequel. You talked about the prequel, and then they talked about, okay, well, Bruce Campbell doesn't want to be in it anymore, so we'll have Ron Perlman play Elvis.
Oh. I don't know if he'd make a good... I like Ron Perlman, but I don't know if he'd make a great Elvis.
Well, there is a sequel. Bubba and the Cosmic Bloodsuckers.
What? That exists?
Which was published by Joe R. Lansdale. So it's a follow-up novella story to the original novella story that he wrote, but he wrote it in response to the, I guess, fervor and success of Bubba Hotep, the film.
Interesting.
Which I will have to check out.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Well, it's one of those things where, again, if you're a fan of this, they had talked about those sequels for so long that at some point you have to just give up waiting for the sequels and move on to something else. Well, I just, you know, not everything is going to be Anchorman, where it does get the sequel 10 years later. I'm not sure in 2021 if I really want a sequel to Bubba Hotep unless it has something to say. I mean, again, this first movie, it ended up having something to say. And I appreciate that movie, you know, this movie, more for it because it did have something to say.
Yeah, you do get more out of it than it leads on.
Yeah. Again, this is the movie that has Elvis and JFK fighting the mummy. So you don't expect to see an interesting kind of musing on getting old and being forgotten. But that is what you ultimately get. And for me, having seen this movie again three or four times, I think that this watch specifically, that is what I take away from it. Is it's a much more serious movie than it leads on.
Yeah, I'd agree. You just get delighted with the other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it has two great performances. Ultimately, Ossie Davis and Bruce Campbell carry the movie. Without them, it probably wouldn't even be half as good as it is.
Oh, no.
Without either one of them. They are so good together. They're so believable together. Even with Elvis, or even with Bruce Campbell in old man makeup, he still plays the grizzled old bastard pretty well.
Yeah. What's the line that he has after they're getting JFK back in bed? What do I care? I got a growth in my pecker.
Yeah, exactly. He's a crusty old bastard.
Yep.
And I like that we get to see this little bit of, you know, Elvis backstory. We don't need it. He's an unreliable narrator. It's used more to convey, you know, more musings about fame and what it means to, you know, be famous, at least as famous as Elvis was. So it's not really about, is he actually Elvis or not? It's to talk about, you know, the price of fame, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember really walking away when I watched it last time thinking about any of the stuff that the movie makes you think about, but this time it's much different.
I think about, we talked about that Bruce Campbell's not trying to impersonate Elvis, but he's just trying to, what do you say, evoke Elvis. And there's moments where they sneak in some iconic Elvis-y things. Like they said that they're okay, that we're going to take a look at the bug situation. He's like, thank you very much. And they're like,
taking care of business.
Yeah. How big was the bug? Oh, about the size of a peanut butter banana sandwich.
And they had the thing with Elvis liking snack food too.
Yep. I thought that was clever. It's somewhat expected, but I think it's still clever how they worked it in.
It's not over the top.
Yeah.
I think I do like the, you want a ding dong? Not my ding dong. You want a chocolate ding dong? Well, mine would be chocolate because they dyed me. There
again,
are some funny moments.
Ossie Davis delivering that line.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some funny moments, but yeah, sustained comedy through the film. Not quite. It's a pretty depressing movie.
It really is.
Yeah. It's about two people growing old in an old folks home and worrying about being forgotten while fighting an ass-sucking mummy.
Because at the beginning of this episode, you mentioned how the first 13 minutes, Bruce Campbell doesn't, like, you don't see him saying a line. But for the same amount of time, is it just him lying in bed?
It's him lying in bed and then having that kind of like internal monologue. Yeah.
I don't think you see him really get up out of bed quite a while.
Futz around maybe a little bit, but yeah, no, again, it's a weird movie and makes some interesting choices that I wouldn't expect out of a movie the way this one was advertised.
Let me ask you this. Do you remember the shots where he's like laying in bed and they, it's like the nurses and stuff, like kind of speedily walking around,
right. But
it's like glitchy time lapse. What do you think that's supposed to mean? Does that mean it's just time wasting away? He's laying in bed, nothing matters.
I kind of took it. Yeah, I took it.
Is he on drugs? Is he on like prescriptions?
I took it as he was sitting there in bed watching. Like the way I interpret it is he's sitting in bed. He's this character who, again, you know, he believes that the world has forgotten about him. He says as much multiple times in the movie, you know, if only I could talk to Priscilla again, if only I could talk to Lisa Marie, you know, those
people,
Elvis's actual wife and daughter. And then, you juxtapose that against these scenes of him sitting there and, you know, it's daytime and then it's nighttime immediately is what it feels like. And yeah, I think it is supposed to show, you know, if you're sitting in one of these convalescence homes, it's hard not to feel that way. That the world is just happening, that instead of you're happening in the world is happening around you. I mean, you hear it in the character of the daughter of the man that was sharing the bed next to him. She's like, you know, it's been 3 years. You know, I was here when I dropped him off, and I was here now when he's dead. And, you know, Elvis, you know, he's chastising her for not showing up. And she's like, I was busy. And, you know, he doesn't say it, but you know he's thinking, you know, you were busy for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the world passes you by. Before, I mean, we were talking about it before we started recording. I've known you for 2 years. Doesn't fucking feel like it.
I know.
I know. It doesn't feel like it. It really doesn't feel like it. I have known you for 2 years, and you and I have hung out 2 times.
In person.
Yeah, in person. Thanks, COVID. It would have been more. It would be more.
It would be more, for sure.
But, I mean, again, it comes back to this idea of the world. You are not driving the world anymore. The world is driving itself, and you are just sitting watching it go by every day. And you get a sense and you understand why people don't want to be in those kinds of places.
Yeah.
Because you are, I mean, again, there is that.
Getting shoved aside.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, we were talking about The Sopranos before I started recording. That's a huge plot point in that first season of the show, is him putting his mom into one of those, I mean, albeit much nicer than the one in this show, in this movie. It's like eight grand a month in 1999. You know, fucking translate that to our money now. But it's that same idea. His mom doesn't want to go to the, you know, the retirement community because she thinks she's, you know, being pushed to the side and forgotten. And that is half of what this movie is about. And like you said, those early scenes really just go to show the world just keeps on going, even if you're not part of it.
Well, and that's what kind of livened him up, is something to live for. You know, it was all of a sudden he had more pep in his step. He's getting boners.
Yeah. Literally a goddamn plot point in this movie. I enjoyed it a lot more this time, and I'm glad that you picked this movie for us to watch.
No, good. Yeah, it's one of the movies, like how you put it, that exists, and you probably won't seek it out. Somehow you'll just stumble across it. Somebody will tell you to watch it, and I think it's worth having in your movie vocabulary.
And look, it ultimately is a film that features a Bruce Campbell performance that's not a Sam Raimi movie a Sam Raimi movie.
And it's a good performance.
Yeah, I mean, take this performance out of this movie and it's still a great performance.
He puts everything into that character.
Yeah, he is a believable, gruff, miserable, old, dejected Elvis.
Yep.
Or Elvis impersonator, whatever you choose to believe.
There's something I read about the movie when Bruce Campbell is given the script. There's one question he asked before he agreed to it, and it was, are you going to show the penis?
Oh. And they told him no.
Yep, so he was all game at that point.
He was worried that he was going to show his real cock. Okay. Prosthetic pecker. That's what he was worried about.
Yep.
I, Bruce Campbell, man who has been in films featuring me cutting my own hand off and my girlfriend's head off, refuse to be in a film with a prosthetic pecker with pus on it. Well, that's a hard line to not cross, Mr. Campbell, but we choose not to cross it with.
And I keep going back what we've talked about with this movie, the serious monologue and dialogue that goes on, and it's pretty well written, and then you have thrown in here growth on the pecker, pus on the dick.
I know.
And souls out the assholes.
I mean, again, looking at the reviews.
But I think that's what makes it fun. It's a fun ride that way.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it cheapens the message of the movie. And I will say it cheapens the message because it makes me feel like the filmmakers didn't feel like that message could stand on its own.
Maybe, yeah.
But you know what? That's okay. Because again, Elvis and JFK fighting a mummy is much more interesting than Elvis in an old folks home in East Texas. Though that could totally work. And I'm not saying that that movie shouldn't exist, because frankly, I would watch that movie too. A more serious take on this without the supernatural element. You know, a man musing on his place in the world. That would be interesting. And that movie's been made. So
yeah. Or is it the battle of Elvis and JFK versus the mummy, and they save it to the end. They do. So that's the bait. And
again, that is the bait for people watching this movie to begin with.
But then it forces people to have to listen to the message.
Again, I go back to what most of these reviewers said, which is some of the reviewers liked the message and some of the reviewers couldn't have cared less about the message. The serious critics were upset that the message got watered down by the horror. I bet the horror fans probably don't care if there was a message. They get to see horror icon Bruce Campbell doing Bruce Campbell stuff.
True. Yep.
Can't please everybody, so I liked it. You liked it. I would say watch it. You would say...
Totally watch it.
Yeah. And this is... Even if I don't think it's a comedy, I think, is this comedy horror or horror comedy?
Ooh.
They're calling it a comedy, not me. But that's what this is. This movie is being considered by most people as a comedy, I guess.
It's tough. I mean, if those are the only two choices, to me, it's comedy before horror.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
There's less horror in this movie than there is comedy. There's not that much comedy, but I think that there's more comedy than there is horror for sure.
And some of the comedy is really subtle, like the old lady stealing the glasses.
Yeah. And not all of the comedy, let me put it this way. Not all of the comedy lands. The horror, I think, lands for the most part. Not all of the comedy lands, and you're not going to come for the comedy.
Yep.
You're coming for the horror, and you stay for the amazing Bruce Campbell performance that this movie, in a lot of ways, is the perfect vehicle for it, but at the same time, I don't think anyone would believe you if you said that there was actually a pretty serious performance in this movie.
Yeah. Given the name, you look at the artwork. It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly. as for me, you can find me at cstatue.com. That's where all the stuff that I work on goes. Patreon.com/culturecast, culturecast.com. All those are places you can find this if you want to. Leave us a favorable review on iTunes or just leave us a review on iTunes. I don't care either way. If you don't like this show and you're taking time out of your busy schedule to write a review about it, I would contend you have better things to do. Not because I don't want to hear a bad review, but like, is it really worth your time?
Maybe go watch the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, Dustin, thank you again for joining me once again. It's an honor.
This is fun. It is.
Yeah. Don't say it's an honor. You're making this seem way more important than it is.
Oh, to me it is. Well, it's great.
I appreciate that you had the gusto to actually pick movies and not just be like, I'll do whatever you want. Hey, wouldn't have the nuts between their legs to pick something. So, hey, you know what? These were both good. I hadn't seen one of them and now I hadn't seen this one in a long time and I'm pleased with both. So not that if they had been bad, I would have cared either way, but you know what I'm saying? I'm content to have now seen Arachnophobia and I can say, yeah, I enjoy Bubba Hotep. As opposed to me thinking that it was not good for like the last 7 years. So
if ever given the chance to do this again with you, have you ever heard of
chance. Given have, the chance?
Have you ever heard of? Have you ever seen the movie Laser Blast? Oh, it's special.
Is it like that Jesse Ventura space movie?
It's worse. What's that? Abraxas? Abraxas? Yeah.
I never seen no such footage. But I was in Abraxas.
You're talking to somebody that's seen a lot of bad movies.
I mean, I've seen a lot of bad movies too. I'm right there with you. Suburban Commando. Come on.
Love it.
That was as long ago as the episode we did for Bubba Hotep. So. No, we'll do another episode.